when Swayambhuva Manu took his birth from Brahma, he asked for his service and he was given responsibilities. Brahma was so pleased with him for his submissive request for service. And he was given responsibilities to rule the world, to procreate children, and to perform jagya, rule the world according to dharma. Ruling the world according to dharma means that the living entities will all be elevated, not degraded. Adharma, irreligious acts, degrade one. And when one is degraded, one becomes what? And when one is elevated, one becomes what? What is the practical meaning of degradation and elevation? What is the standard? In contemporary society, there is no practical distinction and everyone has a different opinion. Degraded means impoverished, practically speaking. Something's wrong with you if you're impoverished. And elevated means the opposite, practically speaking. You're economically developed. You have plenty of wealth and you can do whatever you want. This is the basic standard for by which people are considered elevated or degraded, practically speaking. And aside from that, everyone can have their own opinion about what it means. But dharmic or religious acts elevates one, and elevation means developing up to the mode of goodness and beyond the mode of goodness, beyond sattva-gun, to developing one's eternal relationship with Krishna. This is actually the meaning of elevation, going or moving towards that, and moving in the opposite direction, more deeply and further covered by passion, which leads to ignorance. This is degradation, and the ignorant qualities are indeed horrible. So he was asked, Swayambhuva Manu was asked, to rule the citizens so that they become elevated. But if, as we know, he needed a field of activities to perform his service, and that was upon the earth which had fallen into the bottom of the Garbhodak Ocean. It was lifted by Lord Varahadev, who incarnated, amazingly enough, from the nostril of Lord Brahma. And he was only this big at first, the tip of the thumb. And as he was rescuing the earth, in two verses, almost as a matter of passing, Maitreya Muni describes that he killed the demon named Hiranyaksha. And then, as we heard, there was a great, that Lord Varaha went back to his own abode, and there's great benedictions attached to hearing the pious activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One pleases the Lord, which is the essence of piety. And other acts are pious because they are following the Lord's directions to elevate ones. Pleases the Lord. One achieves one's desires, whatever one desires in this world. Such an incredible benediction just from hearing this pastime of Lord Varahadev's appearance and lifting the earth. So after receiving a benediction like that, one has pleased the Lord, one can achieve whatever one desires, well, then might as well just close the book, pack them up, tie them and leave. But that is not how Vidura was feeling, who was hearing this from whom? Maitreya Muni. Sukadev Goswami continued to narrate to whom?
Maharaj Cricket.
After hearing from the great sage Maitreya about the Lord's incarnation as Varaha, Vidura, who had taken a vow, begged him with folded hands, like this, to please narrate further transcendental activities of the Lord, since he, Vidura, did not yet feel satisfied. And this is an amazing thing about hearing about Krishna, that the heart becomes unsatisfied, but in a different way that the materialistic heart becomes unsatisfied. It longs to hear more. Anandam buddhivardhanam. If one is pure and one hears from a pure source, there is an unending, unlimited ocean. One takes part of that unlimited ocean of bliss, which is our natural relationship with Krishna. So Vidura said, O chief amongst the great sages, who is he speaking to? Maitreya Muni. I've heard by disciplic succession that Hiranyaksha, the original demon, was slain by the same form of sacrifices, the personality of Godhead, Lord Boar. He had just heard it from Maitreya Muni himself. What was the reason, O Brahmana, for the fight between the demon king and Lord Boar while the Lord was lifting the earth as his pastime? Because the Lord was just simply lifting the earth. He was performing an activity for the pleasure or to save the earth, more or less on the request of Lord Brahma. And suddenly there was fighting between him and this demon, Hiranyaksha. We heard the sages, and what was their reaction to seeing the Lord? The sages from which planets? Tapalok, Satyalok. I missed one. Janalok, Mahalok, Tapalok. Brahmaloka is still above. But these great sages, from their mouths issued the purport of the Vedas, and it glorified the Lord. Soon as they saw the Lord, or even before, practically speaking, even before they saw him, they heard his gorgeous roar, and they could understand that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what did they do? They immediately glorified him. You are unconquerable. You are the goal of all sacrifices. It is you whom the Vedas worship. Immediately, this was their reaction. And on the other hand, here is another living entity's reaction upon seeing the Lord, Hiranyaksha. His reaction was just the opposite. And as we'll hear later, it said in one of those two verses, his anger was glowing like the Sudarshan Chakra, Lord Boar's anger, Varahadev's anger. He was furious at this demon. This demon had insulted him. The words of Hiranyaksha pierced his heart. They were cutting. They were nasty. They were insulting. He challenged Varahadev to fight. Immediately upon seeing him, he wanted to fight with him and kill him. And then later, the ending, it has a happy ending. As we know, the Lord's cheeks and tongue were smeared with the blood of the demon after he killed him. Very violently, but effortlessly ultimately. But just see the difference in the natures between this one demon and these many sages when they were confronted with the same thing, the personality of Godhead, Lord Varahadev. Difference in mentality. difference in action based on that mentality. So therefore, Vidura is asking, O Brahmana, for the fight between the demon king and the Lord Boar, while the Lord was lifting the earth, what is the reason for this? What could cause a living entity to immediately, to have so much enmity in his heart towards Krishna, that they immediately, when one sees him, one wants to kill him? My mind has become very inquisitive, and therefore, I'm not satisfied with hearing the narration of the Lord's appearance. I want to hear more. Please, therefore, speak more. Speak more and speak more to a devotee who is faithful. Tell me everything. He's a suitable candidate to hear these transcendental messages, Srila Prabhupada says in his purport. And Maitreya begins to his reply saying, O warrior. Now, this is a fairly long chapter. There's 51 verses in the chapter, and quite a few topics of interest are covered. This is the lead up to something very wonderful. Not that the appearance of Lord Varaha wasn't wonderful. Certainly that was wonderful. And his killing of Hiranyaksha was certainly wonderful. But what was the cause? We're going to hear of that, but not really in this chapter. The prelude we will hear in this chapter, but in the next chapter, in the chapter after that, we will hear the cause of the great enmity between the two. Now, this chapter contains important instructions for the dealings between man and woman. It contains instructions or glorification of Lord Shiva, and it contains some other instructions as well that we'll get to right at the end. But I'm not going to read all the purports because it's much too long to cover the entire chapter in one day. But we'll go through it fairly quickly. One other thing that this chapter is right out of the Bhagavad Gita. I'll explain it after I read some verses from the Bhagavad Gita from chapter 16. What is chapter 16? The divine. There's a great difference between the divine and the demoniac nature. We've just heard it, the difference between the sages and Hiranyaksha. Listen to what Krishna himself describes. This is first the daivi sampat, the qualities of those possessing a divine nature. Fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, nonviolence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness. What does covetousness mean? Yes, to take the possessions, the want, the possessions of others, enviousness, in other words, of what another has, freedom from covetousness, desiring the property of others. What is required within the heart to be free from covetousness? What is required in the heart to, practically speaking, do all these things, to be free from anger, renounce, tranquil, truthful? Yeah, okay. Yes, but that's okay. Purity. And I was looking for the word satisfaction. One has to be satisfied oneself, which means a lack of envy. If one has envy in the heart, it is impossible for him to be satisfied. Very exalted devotional service. Yes, such deep relationship with Krishna. Who is there to get angry at? Ultimately, only Krishna. He's the cause of all causes. Who else are we going to get angry at? More qualities: compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude. Fortitude means fortitude of character, like integrity. Cleanliness and freedom from envy and for the passion for honor. These transcendental qualities, O son of Bharata, belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. Glorious. Now, on the other hand, pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance, these qualities belong to those of a demoniac nature, O son of Pritha. The transcendental qualities are conducive to liberation, whereas the demoniac qualities make for bondage. Do not worry, O son of Pandu, for you are born with the divine qualities. Arjuna was fearing that fighting would be based upon anger, fighting in the battle of Kurukshetra, and anger was demoniac. So no, Arjuna. Your fighting is different. O son of Pritha, in this world there are two kinds of created beings. One is called divine, and the other demoniac. I have already explained to you at length the divine qualities. Now hear from me of the demoniac. Pravritim cha, nivritim cha. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Cannot discriminate between good action, bad action, that which will elevate, that which will degrade, what to do, what not to do. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth is found in them. They say that this world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Following such conclusions, the demoniac, who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world, taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige. The demoniac, thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable, bound by a network of hundreds and thousands of desires, and absorbed in lust and anger. They secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future. More and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. Thus perplexed by such anxieties, and bound by a network of illusions, they become too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and fall down into hell. Self-complacent, always impudent, deluded by wealth and false prestige. They sometimes proudly perform sacrifices in name only, without following any rules and regulations. Bewildered by false egos, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and in the bodies of others, and they blaspheme against the real religion. So what happens? Those who are envious and mischievous, tanaham dvishata kroran samsareshu, who are the lowest amongst men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. This, practically speaking, is a character description of Hiranyaksha. So on one hand, there is Hiranyaksha. On the other hand, the sages. On one hand, the demoniac. On the other hand, divine. Now we're going to hear of the birth, the events preceding the birth of the demon, Hiranyaksha, and his aristocratic brother, whose name was Hiranyakashipu. This, what follows in the verses, is a handbook on how to produce demoniac children. Text 7. And Prabhupada's purports, as you would imagine, tell how to produce divine children. It's also very interesting that in this canto, there is another pastime that speaks of the conception of a child. Here is one, chapter 14, and later on, there is another pastime of the conception of a child. Does anyone know who is that? Or not who yet, but which pastime is that? Kapila, yes. On one hand, when things are done, when the act of procreation is done in this way, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha are born. And on the other hand, when the act of procreation is done in a proper way, then Lord Kapiladev takes his birth. Exactly the opposite. The Lord and one envious of the Lord. Please listen. Ditti. Well, first in text 7. No, we're up to, text 5. O warrior, the inquiry made by you is just befitting a devotee because it concerns the incarnation of the Personality of Godhead. He is the source of liberation from the chain of birth and death for all those who are otherwise destined to die. And what we will hear is the way to become shackled in birth and death by attaining a demonic mentality. By hearing of these topics from the sage Narada, the son of Uttanapada, Dhruva was enlightened regarding the Personality of Godhead, and he ascended to the abode of the Lord, placing his feet over the head of death. The history of the fight between the Lord as a boar and the demon Hiranyaksha was heard by me in a year long ago, as it was described by the foremost of the demigods, Brahma, when he was questioned by the other demigods. So he is explaining what he had heard from Lord Brahma, Maitreya Muni's. Here is the beginning of the birth of Hiranyaksha. Not the beginning, but the point just before the beginning. The very beginning comes in the next chapter. Ditti, daughter of Daksha, being afflicted with sex desire, begged her husband Kasyapa, the son of Marichi, to have intercourse with her in the evening in order to beget a child. The sun was setting, and the sage was sitting in trance after offering oblations to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, whose tongue is the sacrificial fire. In that place, the beautiful Diti expressed her desire. O learned one, Cupid is taking, this is what she said, O learned one, Cupid is taking his arrows and distressing me forcibly, as a mad elephant troubles a banana tree. Therefore, you should be kind towards me by showing me complete mercy. I desire to have sons. All the rest of your co-wives, my sisters, they have children. I have the desire. It is burning within me now. And I am very much distressed by seeing the opulence of my co-wives. By performing this act, you will become happy. She is seducing him. He's involved in trance, in absorption, in the Supreme Lord. She continues, a woman is honored in the world by the benediction of her husband, and a husband like you will become famous by having children because you are meant for the expansion of living entities. In days long ago, our father, the most opulent daksha, who is affectionate to his daughters, asked each of us separately whom we would prefer to select as our husband. Our well-wishing father, daksha, after knowing our intentions, handed over 13 of his daughters unto you, and since then we have all been faithful. We desired to marry you. I desired to marry you, and I've been faithfully serving you. Now is your turn to fulfill my desire. O lotus-eyed one, kindly bless me by fulfilling my desire. When someone in distress approaches a great person, his pleas should never go in vain. So she's saying, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, the time may not be proper, but this is an emergency now. And therefore, when there's an emergency, there is no consideration of propriety of time or place. Maitreya continues, O hero, Vidura, Diti, being thus afflicted by the contamination of lust, and therefore poor and talkative, was pacified by the son of Marichi in suitable words. Now, Prabhupada, we'll read this purport of Prabhupada's in 16. When a man or woman is afflicted by the lust of sex desire, man or woman, certainly lust is not restricted to women. It is to be understood as sinful contamination. This is the result of sinful reactions. Sex desire is a result of sinful reactions. And when one engages improperly, especially in sex, the result is an increase of sex desire, which means an increase of sinful reactions. Contamination, because it's exactly the opposite of desiring to please Krishna's senses. Because lust means desiring to please one's own senses. One's false ego is strengthened completely. Kasyapa was engaged in his spiritual activities, but he did not have sufficient strength to refuse his wife, who was thus afflicted. He could have refused her with strong words expressing impossibility, but he was not as spiritually strong as Vidura. Vidura is addressed here as a hero because no one is stronger in self-control than a devotee of the Lord. It appears that Kasyapa was already inclined to have sexual enjoyment with his wife, and because he was not a strong man, he tried to dissuade her only with pacifying words. There is something that I once read about Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, or rather Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's words describing Gaurakishore Das Babaji. He said, after examining his character, after watching him, I have understood, and I'm paraphrasing this, that in this world, only a Vaishnava can actually have character. Only a Vaishnava can actually have integrity. What does integrity mean? It means that one has principles and one follows those principles. Even if it is difficult, even if it is unpalatable, what is the opposite of integrity? One has principles and does the opposite. And what's that called? Hypocrisy. So the opposite of integrity is hypocrisy. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that only a devotee is actually capable of having integrity in this world. Why? Because there is nothing in this world that is great enough, that will lure him from his principle, which is acting for Krishna's pleasure. Nothing in this world, and Prabhupada later will mention that Haridas Thakur was so strong that a prostitute came to him in the middle of the night and she could not deviate him an inch, rather she became converted. Maya Devi herself came to Haridas Thakur to try to allure him. So really, only an exalted devotee will not fall victim, cannot fall victim. Giriraj Maharaj, he told me recently, when I saw him, he told me that Prabhupada had once said, the difference between not speaking to Giriraj Maharaj, but speaking to devotees, the difference between you and me is that you can fall down, I cannot fall down. And then later in the temple, while all the devotees were standing before the deities, Prabhupada was praying very intensely. And one of the devotees, who is very intelligent and brave, asked Prabhupada, what were you praying so intensely? And Prabhupada replied, I was praying that I could never fall down, that I would not fall down. And the devotee said, Prabhupada, you just said that you could not fall down, and now you're saying you were praying that you could not fall down. And Prabhupada's reply was, that is why I cannot fall down. In other words, it takes complete sincerity again, that word sincerity again, sincerely desiring only to please Krishna, no cracks, no wax, as we heard yesterday. I want to please Krishna fully, sincerely, trying to please Krishna. And then praying, oh Krishna, I am tiny, I am weak, I have so many other desires, so much insincerity rests in my heart, unless you are merciful to me and give me shelter. Where will I be able to go for shelter? So Kadama Muni was a devotee of the Lord. Kasyapa Muni was not actually a devotee, and therefore his strength was limited by his own power, which was very great. Kasyapa Muni was a son of Marichi, one of the mental sons of Lord Brahma. He was so powerful, but yet this allurement of being the enjoyer, whether one is male or female, When one has the enjoying mood, one is in the mood of Purusha. Purusha prakriti stohe bhunte prakriti janiha. The allurement by one's own power is, Maya is powerful, most powerful in this world. This is Maya's kingdom. But Mayevate prapadyante mayametantamantite. This is the way, the only way out, that surrendered mood. So Kasyapa Muni was not so strong, he was inclined. And he began to glorify Aditi to dissuade her, saying that this wasn't the proper time. Now these purports, I'll read the verses, but I won't read the purports. O afflicted one, I shall forthwith gratify whatever desire is dear to you. For who else but you is the source of the three perfections of liberation? As one can cross over the ocean with seagoing vessels, one can cross the dangerous situation of the material world by living with a wife. Now, Prabhupada in his purports describes about marriage life and the proper dealings between husband and wife. And it is very nice. But Prabhupada will also later describe that this is an exaggeration. Who but you? Who else? How else can one cross over the dangerous situation of the material ocean? So he's flattering her. Oh, respectful one, a wife is so helpful that she is called the better half of a man's body. All this is true. Because of her sharing in all auspicious activities, a man can move without anxiety, entrusting all responsibilities to his wife. As a fort commander very easily conquers invading plunderers, by taking shelter of a wife, one can conquer the senses, which are unconquerable in the other social orders. Prabhupada explains in the purport, the wife is supposed to be the commander of the fort, and therefore whenever there is an attack on the body by the senses, it is the wife who protects the body from being smashed. And this is one of the symptoms of the Vedic culture and one of the counter symptoms of Kali Yuga, that the dealings between, in Kali Yuga, the tendency is for the tendency, not the rule, but the tendency is for the dealings between husband and wife to be acrimonious, very difficult. Because this is the nature of Kali Yuga. Upadruta, everyone's mind, manda samanda matayo, manda abhagya upadruta. When it comes to Kadama Muni, Prabhupada will explain in the purport when he gets his wife Devahuti that it is only by Krishna's blessings can one get a good wife. Or vice versa. A woman get a good husband. This is Krishna's mercy. But to overly, and in Kali Yuga, tendency is for fighting. In previous times, people were peaceful. Husband and wife were peaceful at home. Satisfied at home. Because the atmosphere wasn't disturbed and agitated as it is now. But yet, Kasyapa Muni is overly stating the wife's position. O queen of the home, we are not able to act like you, nor could we repay you for what you have done, even if we worked our entire life or even after death. To repay you is not possible, even for those who are admirers of personal qualities. So Prabhupada explains at the end of that purport, at the end of 21, he says, not all husbands are able to appreciate the good qualities of their wives. But even though one is able to appreciate these qualities, it is still not possible to repay the debt to the wife. Such extraordinary praise by a husband for his wife are certainly in the mode of joking. So he continues saying to her, even though it is not possible to repay you, I shall satisfy your sex desire immediately for the sake of begetting children. But you must wait for only a few seconds so that others may not reproach me. Yes, we will have children, But now the time isn't auspicious. It is not the right time. Just wait. This particular time is most inauspicious, because at this time, the horrible-looking ghosts and constant companions of the Lord of the ghosts, of Lord Shiva, are visible. Lord Shiva, the king of the ghosts, sitting on the back of his bull carrier, whose name is? Travels at this time. This was at the Sandhya, twilight, accompanied by ghosts who follow him for their welfare. So in text 24 through 29, there is glorification of Lord Shiva by Kasyapa. Lord Shiva's body is reddish and he is unstained, but he's covered with ashes. His hair is dusty from the whirlwind dust of the burning crematorium. He's the younger brother of your husband, and he sees with his three eyes. Prabhupada explains in the last lines of his purport the problem with conceiving a child at this time. Lord Shiva, the Lord of the ghosts, would punish Diti and Kasyapa by their giving birth to a child of a ghostly character or a godless, impersonalist. And Kasyapa saw this and he warned his wife Diti, no. Lord Shiva regards no one as his relative. Yet there is no one who is not connected with him, because he is the glance, the Shambhu, the glance that injects the living entities within the material world. He does not regard anyone as favorable or abominable. We respectfully worship the remnants of his foodstuff, and we vow to accept what is rejected by him. Although no one in the material world is equal to or greater than Lord Shiva, and although his unimpeachable character is followed by great souls to dismantle the mass of nescience, Lord Shiva is the Lord of Ahankar, false ego, he nevertheless remains as if a devil to give salvation to all the devotees of the Lord. He deals with tamagun, but he himself is not afflicted by it. Unfortunate, foolish persons, not knowing that he is engaged in his own self, laugh at him. Such foolish persons may engage in maintaining the body, which is eatable by dogs, with dresses, ornaments, garlands, and ornaments. Demigods like Lord Brahma also follow the religious rites observed by him. He is the controller of the material energy which causes the creation of the material world. He is great, and therefore his devilish characteristics are simply imitation. So this is warning everyone. Although Lord Shiva is, when he is worshipped as one time in Hong Kong, the head of the Hindu temple, when Prabhupada was visiting in 1973, he came to see Prabhupada and he invited Prabhupada to come to the temple. So later on, after he had left, Prabhupada said, Do you think I should go? And I had stayed at that temple at different times, I had visited. So I knew the situation. So I said, no, Prabhupada, I don't think you should go. Why? Because they worship Lord Shiva there, I said. Because all the gods were there, but their main worship was to Lord Shiva. And Prabhupada replied and said, very angrily, he said, and do you tell them not to worship Lord Shiva? And I said, no, Prabhupada. But they worship him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as if he's the Supreme Lord. They were impersonalists, of course. And Prabhupada said, oh, then I don't want to go. But to think that the demigods are equal to the Supreme Personality of God, it is aparad, namaparad. But also to disrespect the demigods, to see them as separate, avina, is also offensive. They get their power from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And of course, Vaishnavanam, Yata Shambhu, Lord Shiva is the greatest of devotees. And he, as in Vrindavan, he's the four protectors of the Dham, the Dikpals, as Kameshwar Mahadev, as Chakaleshwar Mahadev, as Bhuteshwar and Gopishwar. And as Gopishwar Mahadev, he allows entrance into the Rasa dance even. So Lord Shiva is given the greatest respect as Vaishnava. Maitreya said, Diti was thus informed by her husband, but she was pressed by Cupid for sexual satisfaction. So when there is lust, when children are conceived in great lust, there's problems. That mentality is transferred to the children and they become demoniac. So Diti caught hold of the clothing of the great Brahmana sage just like a shameless public prostitute. And Prabhupada explains in his purport, the difference between a married wife and a public prostitute is that one is restrained in sex life by the rules and regulations of the scriptures, where the other is unrestricted in sex life and is conducted solely by the strong sex urge. Although very enlightened, Kasyapa, the great sage, became a victim of his prostitute wife. Such is the strong force of material energy. This is the strong force of material energy. No one should underestimate the strong force of material energy. No one should underestimate the strong force of material energy. There is only one protection, really, and that is to be praying to Krishna, as Prabhupada's example in that little pastime related by Giriraj Maharaj shows. We should know that we are tiny. We are not only tiny, but insignificant. We are tiny and insignificant. Daivyesha gunamayi mamamaya dharatyaya. And the material energy is daivi. It is empowered by Krishna to entrap the living entities in the material, who have turned their back on Krishna in the material world. And it is very, very powerful. Very, very, very powerful. And one should know that we, on the other hand, are tiny and insignificant. So therefore, by constantly praying to Krishna, then one can be protected. Such is the strong force of material energy. Kasyapa Muni was very powerful. Understanding his wife's purpose, he was obliged to perform the forbidden act, and thus after offering his obeisances unto worshipable fate, he lay with her in a secluded place. And herein Prabhupada glorifies Thakur Haridas. And in the last line of Prabhupada's purport, which explains the source of Thakur Haridas' strengths, how he could protect himself, although by birth, at least by birth, he was not so exalted like Kasyapa. But Thakur Haridas used to chant the holy name of the Lord 300,000 times daily. How many rounds is that? Huh? 3 times 64. Yes. How many rounds is that? 192. 3 lakhs. 1 lakh 64 rounds. 3 times. So if it takes 16 hours a day, 2 hours approximately to chant 16 rounds, And 4 times 16 is 64, so that's 8 hours. And 3 lakhs, 8 times 3, 24 hours, basically, he was chanting Krishna's names. How is that possible to be chanting Krishna's names 24 hours a day? It is possible if what? One has a taste. One, it is only possible because where is the taste coming from? It is coming from associating with Krishna because Krishna is his name. Full satisfaction of the heart comes from fully, continuously associating with Krishna. And it is not that Prabhupada's instruction was to chant 16 rounds a day, finished. No more need to chant Hare Krishna. The rest of the time, I can be unconnected with Krishna. The rest of the time, I can... Anyway, you all know this. Really, Kirtaniya Sadahari is Mahaprabhu's instructions. So this is ideal. This is perfect. Thakur Haridas was Namacharya. He was the great teacher, the example of chanting Krishna's names. An example that we should aspire for. Aspire to follow. It is ideal. Ideals are set up for us to aspire for, to always, constantly chant Hare Krishna. Constantly. It is the best of all habits. It is the best training for the mind. It is the way to take shelter of Krishna. To try as much as possible to chant Krishna's names and to be aware when we are not chanting Krishna's names. Because as soon as we don't chant Krishna's names, what tends to happen? There's a tendency. When there's good chanting of Krishna's names, then it is like the light. Krishna Surya Sam Maya Haya Andhakar. So somehow or another, to keep the light of Krishna alive in our heart, in our consciousness, to keep it burning brightly. And the difficulty in doing that, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, is passion and ignorance. Not very hard, impossible to be fixed. So therefore we pray, we study Bhagavatam, we learn what is good, what is bad, what we have to do, what we shouldn't do. And we move forward, we try our best to take steps towards Krishna. Even though our steps according to our capacity may be very, very, very small, very small. In Croatia, Prabhu, if you take one step towards Krishna, how many does he take towards you in Croatia? How many? Unlimited, okay. I've heard 10, I've heard 100, I've heard 1,000, unlimited. But this is our job, is to take those little steps, taking according to our capacity, take steps towards Krishna. So he, Kasyapa, he paid his obeisances to fate because he understood this is going to have an inauspicious result. Thereafter, the Brahmana took his bath in the water and controlled his speech, and by practicing trance, meditating on the eternal effulgence and chanting the holy Gayatri hymns within his mouth. O son of the Bharata family, Diti, after this, went nearer to her husband. Her face lowered because of her faulty action. She spoke as follows. The beautiful Diti said, "My dear Brahmana," she was fearful, Kindly see that my embryo is not killed by Lord Shiva, the Lord of all living entities, because of the great offense I've committed against him. She sought protection from her husband. Let me offer my obeisances unto the angry Lord Shiva, who is simultaneously the very ferocious great demigod and the fulfiller of all material desires. He is all auspicious and forgiving, but his anger can immediately move him to chastise. Let him be pleased with us, since he is my brother-in-law, the husband of my sister Sati. He is also the worshipable lord of all women. He is the personality of all opulences and can show mercy towards women who are excused even by the uncivilized hunters. Maitreya said, the great sage Kasyapa thus addressed his wife, who was trembling because of fear that her husband was offended. She understood that he had been dissuaded from his daily duties of offering evening prayers, yet she desired the welfare of her children in the world. She was afraid that the child within her embryo, the embryo within, would be aborted and killed. And Kasyapa replied, because of your minds being polluted, because of defilement of the particular time, because of your negligence of my directions, and because of your being apathetic to the demigods, everything was inauspicious. O haughty one, you will have two contemptuous sons born of your condemned womb. Unlucky woman, they will cause constant lamentation to all the three worlds. They will kill poor, faultless living entities. They will torture women and enrage the great souls. At that time, because they will be so horrendous and horrible, the Lord of the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the well-wisher of all living entities, will descend and kill them, just as Indra smashes the mountains with his thunderbolts. When Diti heard that her sons would be killed by God, by the Supreme Lord, even though they were so offensive and nasty and terrible, she said, it is very good that my sons will be magnanimously killed by the arms of the Personality of Godhead with his Sulishan weapon. She thought that was wonderful. She was so deeply faithful in Krishna. Despite this, despite her shortcomings, she was so deeply faithful. Listen to the results that are ultimately going to occur. Oh, my husband, may they never be killed by the wrath of the Brahmin devotees. Because if the devotees become angry, like they killed Vena, by their curse, the Brahmins, and the result isn't the same as if killed by the Lord. She was fearing that the children would be so offensive to the Brahmins that the Brahmins would take the matter into their own hands and kill him, and that she didn't want. Oh, let them be killed by the Lord himself. A person who is condemned by a Brahmana or is always fearful to other living entities is not favored either by those who are already in hell or by those in the species in which he is born. So here, there was glorification of Lord Shiva. There has been in this chapter description of what not to do. If one wishes to have godly children. And here is further description of what is to be feared in causing difficulties to Brahmins. A person who is condemned by a brahmana or is always fearful to other living entities, he's going to be unfavored by everyone. Let him be killed by the Lord. And Kasyapa replied, because of your lamentation, she felt terrible. She had done something improper. Who else lamented? And that purified his heart. Yes. But look what it took to cause him to lament what he had done. He was on the verge of death and he saw the Yamadutas. He was terrified. But then he still wasn't purified enough to go back home, back to Godhead. He had to do service, but in Haridwar, in living in a Vishnu temple. But before he could do that even, he had to lament for all the sinful activities he had done, all the impropriety. Sincere lamentation. Oh, I should have brought in also the song by Bhaktivinod Thakur called Amara Jivan. What does Amara Jivan mean? My life. My life. Jivan means life. Amar means Bengali, my life. And it wasn't, oh, I have done so many things in my life. Does anyone have a songbook? Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, we can. Yes, we. Sharanagati, we can call it up. Is it in the songbook? Well, I think not, though. Could someone? Yes, it's there somewhere. It's an incredible song. And to hear Prabhupada sing it. Does anyone have it on? We can hear Prabhupada sing it? You have it? Someone must have that. Amara Jivan. It's incredible. Huh? Amara Jivan. It starts with that line. Amara Jivan. Someone looking to play it? Then we will all glorify computers if someone could at this moment play it. I have it on my computer. Lamentation. That's not one of the six principles. It's in Sharanagati. But it's in Sharanagati. No one has it. Gee. Our hard drives are all useless. Okay. But I wanted to hear Prabhupada. No one has it. You don't have it on your little your Arcos. Okay. I have it on mine, but what use is it? I don't have it. This is... And Prabhupada sings it in such a way. This is how devotees think. Oh, but this is Prabhupada's... This is a transcription of what Prabhupada says about it. My life is always engaged. Amara Jivan Sada Paparata. My life is Sada Papa, always engaged in sinful activities. And if you try to find out Nahiko Punyera Lesh, you will not be able to find any punya, any piety in me. I won't read the whole thing now. I'll just read the quotations from here that Prabhupada's saying. I'm always inclined to give trouble to other living entities. I want to see that others are suffering, then I enjoy. This means that the heart has envy in it. I'm happy when I see that someone is suffering. I think, oh, he's finally getting what he deserved after what he said to me one time. Huh. Then I'm happy. When I see someone happy, then I feel miserable. For my personal sense gratification, I accept any kind of sinful activity. I am not merciful. I am just swarta. My own personal interests, selfish, that's all I see. para dukkha sukha karo. And if someone is suffering, that is pleasant to me. I have so many desires in my heart. I'm always angry. So much feelings of myself, false prestige, puffed up. Mada mata sara vishaye mohita. I'm captivated by subject matters of sense gratification. And I'm almost crazy. I'm crazy. I know. Janiya sunya bishakainu. I've heard that these things are bad for me. I know it's bad for me. But still. Drinking poison knowingly. My ornaments are enviousness and false pride. I'm conquered by sleep and laziness. And when you hear Prabhupada singing this, very touching, and compare that to my arrogance. Oh, I'm a devotee, good devotee. I'm enthusiastic to perform impious activities. I cheat others for my prestige. I'm conquered by greediness and always lusty. Loba hata sada kami. Ehino durjana sajjana varjita. I'm so fallen. I have no association with devotees. Aparadi narantara. I always commit offenses. Shubha karja shunya. In my life, there is not a bit of auspicious activity. This is exactly what every psychiatrist and psychologist in contemporary society will tell you. You should think just the opposite. You have to raise your self-esteem. Think, yes, you should think you are great. You can do it. You can do it. Vaishnava humility. My mind is always attracted by something mischievous. Nana duke jara jara. Therefore, at the fag end of my life, I am almost invalid by such sufferings. Bara dake ikone upaya vihin. Now in my old age, I have no alternative. Tate dina akinchana. Therefore, by force, I have become humble and meek. Prabhupada said, that in old age, you will lose your arrogance. An old man cannot be proud because everything is taken away. He looks in the mirror and wonders who that is. Distorted face, everything hurts, no strength, fearful all the time, can fall over, trip, break something so easily. No more pride. Forced. Thus Bhaktivinod Thakur is offering his sad statement of his life's activities at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And even that is offered. The actual pain of that, it is not that when one feels humble, it feels very good. When one actually comes to grips with one's low nature and one's enviousness and greedy, lustful, horrible heart and all that. It's not, oh, Jaya, I feel humble now. How wonderful. No. One feels miserable, low, how horrible. And then one becomes qualified to chant. Trinada peace, Unichina, Turoda peace. And then one can be tolerant. When there is false ego and pride, how can one be tolerant? Where will be the impotence to tolerance? But it's only when you feel something, yourself, oneself like grass that everyone steps on, animal food, that one can be tolerant. Yeah, this is what I get. So it's a miserable feeling. But in that misery, if one can actually call out Krishna's name in full shelter, taking full surrender, then Krishna is there in that kind of chanting. Namasraya jata kore jatana tumi. This is Bhaktivinod Thakur's recommendation, to take shelter of Krishna's names in that way. Because of your lamentation, she sincerely regretted her misconduct. Penitence and proper deliberation, and also because of your unflinching faith in the Supreme Personality of your Godhead. So he's cursed her. He said, "What's going? Because of your what you've done, who is going to be born in your womb? The most horrible creatures." But when she replied humbly and faithfully that they'll be killed by the Lord, glorious, because of this, because of your penitence, lamentation, and your faith, and your adoration of Lord Shiva and me, one of the sons of your son will be an approved devotee of the Lord. And his fame will be broadcast equally with that of the Personality of Godhead. Your grandson will be Prahlad. Now he's going to glorify Prahlad. In order to follow in his footsteps, saintly persons will try to emulate his character by practicing freedom from animosity. Prahlad never became the enemy of his enemy. Just as the purifying processes rectify gold of inferior qualities, he forgave fully. He never, as Prabhupada explained, he did not ask any benediction that he might have asked, but he prayed that his atheistic father might be liberated. He never cursed any of the persons who engaged in torturing him at the instigation of his father. This was Prahlad, and everyone will follow his footsteps. Everyone will be pleased with him because the Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller of the universe, is always satisfied with a devotee who does not wish for anything beyond him, the Lord's pleasure. That topmost devotee of the Lord will have expanded intelligence and expanded influence and will be the greatest of the great souls. Due to mature devotional service, he will certainly be situated in transcendental ecstasy and will enter the spiritual sky after quitting this material world. He will be virtuously qualified, a reservoir of all good qualities. He will be jolly and happy in others' happiness, distressed in others' distress, and will have no enemies. He will be a destroyer of the lamentation of the universes, like the pleasant moon after the summer sun. Prabhupada says at the end, the last two lines of the purport, "The most obnoxious misery of a living entity is his forgetfulness of Krishna. A pure devotee, therefore, always tries to evoke everyone's Krishna consciousness. This is the panacea for all miseries." Your grandson will be able to see inside and outside the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose wife is the beautiful goddess of fortune. Bahir Nasingo Riddaye Nasingo. The Lord can assume the form desired by the devotee, and his face is always beautifully decorated with earrings. Yeah, you quoted that verse yesterday. Prabhupada paraphrases it here in the purport to 50. Yad yaddi ataru rugaya vibhavayanti tantan pranayeshe saranugrahaya. A pure devotee becomes attached to one of the eternal forms of the Lord. And the Lord is pleased, anugrahaya, by his mercy, to appear before him in the form desired. A devotee does not imagine something whimsical about the form of the Lord, nor does he ever think that the Lord is impersonal and can assume a form desired by the non-devotee. The non-devotee has no idea of the form of the Lord, and thus he cannot think of any one of the above-mentioned forms. But whenever a devotee sees the Lord, he sees him in a most beautifully decorated form, accompanied by his constant companion, the goddess of fortune, Srimati Radharani, who is eternally beautiful. So Kasyapa Muni, therefore, blessed Diti that she would have a wonderful devotee as her grandson. The sage Maitreya said, hearing that her grandson would be a great devotee and that her sons would be killed by Krishna, Diti was highly pleased in mind. So that ends the 14th chapter of the third canto. And soon we'll hear, anyway, I won't talk ahead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, any questions, comments? Or was this a pastime? Or, well, the other half of that question? One half only. Was she a devotee? Anyone? She was certainly devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and had faith in him, because she heard that he would be killed, or her sons would be killed by him, and therefore she was happy. She knew the result. A devotee. So therefore, did you mean pure devotee, or just general? What do you think? On the other hand, it said that Kasyapa was an impersonalist. Kadama Muni, interestingly enough, is a devotee. And he, it's so interesting, we'll hear about it, but so interesting. Kadama Muni was a devotee, and he did austerities for 10,000 years. And as a result of that, Lord Narayan came and said, I will become your son. So, as soon as the Lord came, and he was a devotee, and came as his son, he left home and took. Quite amazing. This is why it is explained, but quite amazing, nevertheless. But these personalities are so great. It's hard to know. Who's playing what role, for what reason, for Krishna's pleasure. So you're putting up the position that the wife was better than the husband. Okay. Yes? Yes?
Yeah, but I thought the Lamaras liberates so many generations back in the old.
Yes? He's a soft impersonalist. Okay. Yes, Charlotte. It doesn't seem like it. It doesn't seem like he sees the past in that way. But we'll be able to see it, not tomorrow. Yes, what is he? Yes. I don't know. I also was wondering, does anyone know what vow Vidura had taken? Oh yeah, he left home. That was one vow. Well, that he left home very strongly and said he's not going to return. He's finished with it. He left his bow, he left. He went on pilgrimage. But yet he returned home after, because he had some service to do. Some wonderful service. And all this, the third canto and the fourth canto are all Maitreya speaking to Vidura. And right at the end of the fourth canto, after hearing about so many kings in the fourth canto between Prachini Barhishat, Prithu Maharaj, so many kings did not stick at home. And to their death, they left home. He heard all that and how they gained so much by leaving home. Isn't the sound of cows attractive? Charles, what do cows sound like? Someone did a good cow. You know how to speak cow? It's pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. So when Vidura heard that, he wanted to save Dhritarashtra. So then he went back. And that's the, we heard about that in the 13th chapter of the first canto, and we heard about Vidura's leaving right in the beginning of this third canto. So his leaving on pilgrimage is the third in the fourth canto, and then at the end of the fourth canto, he goes back, which we heard about in the first canto. He had become a place of pilgrimage himself. Dhruva had received a blessing that although he would rule the earth for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, he would never become old. You read carefully. He had received that blessing, and we'll hear about Dhruva, of course, in the fourth canto. Any other questions or comments? Well, that's what, after all the service you've done for me, and therefore you're asking me for this, and that you're saying that you're afflicted, I'm obliged to satisfy you. And Prabhupada said, being too much obliged to one's wife in that material sense. And these are, is unhealthy. But yes, that was the indication that you had done so much service. And she was saying that, you know, we've chosen you. We chose you, and now you have to, I've served you, now you have to satisfy me. So materialistic tendencies have to be avoided. Yes, but it says also that he was inclined. One of the purports said that he was actually inclined. So all he couldn't say no, because he had some inclination in that regard. So therefore, he tried to more or less lightly persuade her of the impropriety, as opposed to saying no because of his own inclination. That's what. He was not a strong man like Thakur Haridas, Prabhupada explained. But ultimately, it seems that these things are pastimes. Yeah. Yeah. And then, even though Kaliya was attracted by the beauty of Krishna, he saw Krishna and his beauty. He saw Krishna. He's so beautiful. But still the enmity, the envy in his heart overpowered his appreciation of Krishna's beauty and immediately tried to kill him. You dare to enter my lake. So envy is not a good one. But Narottama Das Thakur says, Dvesha, Prem Bhakti Chandrika, there is a use for enviousness. Does anyone know what it is? Prabhupada quotes it also. Anyone know the proper use for enviousness? Dvesh. Transcendental competition, no. Good guess though, but no. There's actually no place for enviousness in transcendental competition. There's a place for enviousness in mundane competition only. Yes? Because enviousness, what does enviousness mean? What does enviousness mean? Vicious, yeah, but what does it mean? What? Yes, but more than that. Yes, you want harm. You wish harm to the other. That's a component of envy. It's not just you want the thing that they have, but you become happy at their misery and miserable at their happiness. If one has envy in the heart, and everyone in this world is envious of Krishna, this is the meaning of the material world, and that's where envy springs from, because who has more than Krishna? So it's the root. So what is the proper use, do you know? Yes, that's what the one place is, what Narottama Das Thakur says. Okay. Yeah. Bhakti, the ones who are envious of the devotees, one should be inimical, or can be angered. That's actually anger, possibly. Those who are envious of devotees, who wish harm to devotees, the proper receptacle of anger. And he became angry because I was saying, are you saying that it was bad to worship Lord Shiva? That was the implication. And do you tell them not to worship? Is that how you're preaching? Do you tell them not to worship Lord Shiva? That it's bad to worship Lord Shiva? That's aparad. To see the demigods, to neglect the demigods, just to not properly respect the demigods as being part of Krishna. No. Because in my innocence, I had missed that fault. But later, I felt that I had been inimical to envious of Lord Shiva a bit. And ever since then, I'm always very careful to be very respectful and affectionate to Lord Shiva and other demigods. Because we tend to, demigods, how many books did they distribute? Or something like that. They're empowered agents of Krishna. They're part of Krishna. We've heard it, part of the universal form of Krishna. They're respected agents of Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Prabhupada ki jai. Prahlad Maharaj ki jai.